Like I talked about before, how, I was able to make something a career. And it really was like in Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, even in Kentucky, you were in a respected career. Like that was, when kids talk about, oh, I want to be a doctor or whatever. I always felt like in Canada, it wasn't that respected career. But working overseas, you really got to see in countries where they're very passionate about horses. And like it's a society is passionate about horses. There was good benefits and housing, and there was structure around a career like that. And so it was an amazing experience, but it really showed me the horses could be an actual living and not a hobby.
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade. Something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. If you were to spin a globe slowly, the chances are good that at least a few of the places Megan Mackenzie Bell has gotten her education in with horses would spin past. The horse girl who got started by learning how to ride quarter horses has turned a global education into one of those cogs that help the equine industry run a bit smoother when things are not going smooth at all. Megan joins Hitting Your Stride to talk about her role as Senior Manager of Operations at Henry Equestrian, powered by NFP. In short, she's the woman who can help you with your equine insurance needs, but there's a longer and more interesting story in the background. As with most horse girls, Megan got her start with the aforementioned quarter horses. Following completion of her university education, Megan began her learning process again with jobs in Ireland, Kentucky, Australia, and New Zealand before returning home to Canada. In this episode, she talks with me about growing up on a farm she jokingly referred to as Binder Twine Alley, while talking about how her globe-trotting journey has been part scary and inspiring, while full of friendships and joy. As the conversation progresses, Megan talks about making the most of her horse girl roots in the field of insurance, and how that experience helps her bridge the gaps for her clients. She's learned to communicate in different ways with people in the office as well in the barn. The learning has been an ongoing endeavor for Megan, but with that comes her sense of mentorship, and she helps to champion the growing role of women, whether it be in the equine, insurance, or business worlds. As she says, a background in horses means you can pretty much do anything. Megan offers an interesting take on her career and her passion for horses, and I hope you get as much out of this episode as I did. And now, on with the show. Welcome back, everybody, to Hitting Your Stride. And today I have with me Megan Mackenzie Bell. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks so much for having me. It's so nice to meet you, Tracy.
Yeah, it's great to meet you. And I hear that you and your colleagues are listeners to Hitting Your Stride. So I always appreciate that.
Yeah. Obsessive horse people got to find other obsessive horse people to listen to. So
that's right. Awesome. All right. So you have packed a lot of experience in the equine world into a relatively short amount of time. Can you describe that experience? Here's the test in 5 words, and let's go from there.
All right. I'm hopeful I get to explain these 5 words because I.
Please.
So scary, inspiring, friendship, mentorship, and joy.
Ooh, okay. Go ahead.
So scary was, horses are massive creatures. I started riding when I was 7. My riding instructor has described me to my mother as the most terrified child she's ever seen. And yet I kept going, was, totally enamored. But, my first move to Ireland after finishing undergrad and like sort of getting dropped off at the airport, didn't know what to expect, had never worked in the thoroughbred industry before, grew up with quarter horses, breeding quarter horses, riding. So that was the unknown. Yeah, just lots of scary, but so worth it. I have become a bit addicted to that scary feeling.
That's cool, because like that's usually the sign that you're doing something right. Believe, and you
Exactly.
just have to trust that. So
Yeah.
yeah, for a kid that seemed terrified and all of a sudden you're heading over to Ireland, good for you.
Yeah. It's a good, I mean, I hopefully I became a little less terrified over, those few years, but and then inspiring, I think, you meet so many incredible, passionate people from around the world who love horses, and that's why they do any of this. And it really inspired me to make it a career. I had plans, as we, I think half of the horse girls out there, I was gonna become a vet and I was gonna do this and that. And a lot of these people that I met in Ireland that were from all around the world really inspired me that horses could be a profession in themselves. It didn't have to be because I do other things, And so I was very lucky that so many people were there to inspire and to maybe sometimes mimic. Yeah, just it was incredible to watch people who love doing what they do. And then friendship, I mean, horse people stick together, I think. And it doesn't matter where you're from. I could probably call someone I worked with in Australia or New Zealand and be like, hey, I'm going to be in town. Can I stay at your place? Or can you help me with something? And not because I'm special or anything about me. I think it's because horse people are so incredibly generous and they would go out of their way to help you and to do something that would, maybe be a pain in the butt to them, but would mean so much to you. So I think, and I mean, even just from growing up with horse people, still, I saw someone that when I was a kid was like one of the grown-ups at the barn. And she was at the Royal this year, and or I guess last year, and she saw me and she ran up to me and was like, Megan, and I haven't seen her probably in 25 years.
Wow.
And there's still that like connection because you have that love together of horses. And I think that connects so many people.
Yep.
And then mentorship, I mean, that sort of goes hand in hand with that friendship. Horse people are incredibly generous with their time and their knowledge. And I've been really lucky to be mentored by some of the best people in the Canadian quarter horse industry. Growing up, my second family, they were some of the top breeders of quarter horses in Canada. She was the Congress quarter horse queen, Nikki Amlin. So very lucky. And then to move into some of the world's best international thoroughbred breeders. I worked in Ireland for Darrenstown Stud, which is or was owned by the late Sheikh Hamdan from Dubai. He was the deputy ruler of Dubai. And lots of very high level thoroughbred breeders and managers, and they were all incredibly generous with their time and took me under their wing in so many ways. So I mean, very, very lucky. And then joy, I think every horse person knows that joy of being with a horse and making that connection. And when I was foaling, helping that new foal come into the world is like one of the most amazing feelings in the world. Even creating that connection with a horse, whether it's the horse you have, like your horse from as a child, or the one colt you're prepping for sale, and you like that's your baby, that's your guy. And then you see him sell well and maybe even race well. I mean, that's just one of the best feelings. So
That's awesome. That's
yeah.
awesome. Yeah. I mean, there are so many parts there that you just said that sort of took me back through my journey, of prepping standard bred yearlings and how
Oh
much
yeah.
I learned about
Standard
those
level.
guys. And yeah. So, okay, that's great. I mean, I guess Oh, let me just get into this next question then, because it's kind of making me think of another question I want to ask you here. So you are the first insurance broker I've had on Hitting Your Stride. So can you talk us through what that line of work entails and what makes it rewarding for you to help, you know, for you and for your clients?
So I think most people think of insurance brokers in terms of that, like home and auto, those basic pieces of insurance that everyone has to have and no one likes to talk about. So for us, we're, you know, your guide and advocate in the confusing world of insurance. And you know, at Henry and NFP, we take it a bit farther and we utilize our knowledge of the insurance world and we combine it with our passion for horses because we're all horse people. And so we're a specialty brokerage at Henry Equestrian, and it's really important when you have those specialty items to ensure that you have those specialty brokers. So all of our brokers help clients navigate insuring their horses, their farms, liability policies, trucks and trailers. I mean, we can do home and auto. We joke that like if you touch a horse, we'll insure anything you own. We try and, you know, we specialize in those specialty things that are in the horse world. And I mean, we've all had clients, or I mean, maybe as a horse person yourself, like trying to insure a specialty risk like a farm or a horse with a broker that has no horse experience, or, you know, it's just, there's so many opportunities to mess up, to leave yourself with giant gaps in insurance. Where you end up finding out you don't have the coverage when you have a claim and when it's the worst point in time to have no coverage.
Especially because, like you said, if you're dealing with an insurance person that doesn't know horses, it's like a completely different language.
Oh, completely. Like we had the other day, we had someone come to us from another brokerage who had done a very admirable job. It's not like they were doing a poor job, but the broker didn't know what the word foal meant. And the woman was a breeder, and she was like, I kind of need you to know what this is. Or, you know, we have people who have boarding facilities and they've decided to, you know, or start a new boarding facility. And their current broker, who has insured their farm for forever, who's done a great job, is like, I don't know how to do that. What policy, like what coverage do you need? No idea. Whereas, you know, we, because that's our bread and butter, that's all we do. We don't do cattle farms. I mean, I guess we can. We don't really love it. You know, we do horse farms. That's all we do. We know it front to back. And I think for myself, and I know most of my brokers, we enjoy this career because it's allowed us to work in it or continue to work in an industry that we love and work with horse people, you know, all while, you know, no longer getting kicked in the face or not having any weekends off or not having any holidays off. Because all of our brokers have transitioned from working on farms or working for vets or, you know, our horse people growing up and they've had horses for forever. And so they've been able to combine it, which I think means that we understand the needs of the equestrian client. But our brokers also love dealing with it. Like we like talking to the person who's just purchased their first horse, or they're getting the opportunity to import a horse from Europe and it's their dream horse. Like we love it. Like sometimes we get clients who send us in photos and those get like sent around to the whole team. Like everyone gets a chance to like ooh and ah over someone's baby or whatever. I even used to when I was an active broker, so I manage the brokerage now, but when I was a broker, sometimes I'd keep those in a file and like when you'd have a really tough day, you'd be like, oh, I just need to see a foal.
Now, do you guys, like, as far as what's involved, do you go out to the farms and assess the properties and then, you know, that kind of thing? Or is it just all sort of all done in office, etc.?
It really depends. So, for the most part, our brokers are all based in Ontario. We do have some brokers for our parent company, NFP, that are out west. But so we can, and we have gone out to lots of farms. And, you know, we go and meet the client, we take photos, we try and do as much hand holding in person as possible. But when we're in Ontario and we're helping someone in BC, you know, a lot of times we rely on photos and lots of long phone conversations, which I know that can be it's a both a good and a bad thing, I think, for our clients. We would love to be able to go out to every single farm, but you know, it's just not possible. But I think the amount of time we spend just getting into the nitty-gritty details on the phone really makes a huge difference. Like sometimes our calls are like 2 or 3 hours long, which is a long time to have to spend focusing on insurance for a non-insurance person. But we try and make it, you know, approachable. So we try and rely on, you know, talking through stories about or examples as to why a coverage might be important. So we get it across to people in a way that isn't like robotic. This is why you need to check this box. This is why this is the right thing to do. We want people to truly understand what this means, what the coverage means, how it would respond. Okay. So as much as, you know, people don't like insurance, we try and be the people who make it not as horrible.
Well, and I think that's really important. And like you've mentioned, the passion for the animal, I think, is what should slash could unite everybody that needs your services, right? So it's like keeping an open mind and understanding. It's like, yes, I mean, my father was an insurance agent for most of his life. And it's like, you know, there's that, oh, he's an insurance salesman. Like you get that, but everybody needs it, whether we like it or not. Yeah.
And you might as well have insurance with somebody who either gets to, you know, gets excited for you when they know that you've made it to the Royal this year, or, you know, understands exactly how gut-wrenching it is when your horse colics. Like, we're not like, oh, they're there, I don't really understand, but it's like a car, it breaks down. We've all had the horses colicking at 2 in the morning and have been walking them and desperately waiting for the vet. So we, you know, having a broker that gets it, really, I think, makes it.
All right. So your work in the industry prior to your current position, working as like literally took you around the world. And so how did working as a thoroughbred salesperson and foaling attendant in Australia, New Zealand, and in Ireland as well, help shape the girl who began riding quarter horses at the age of 7?
Well, I think it's funny because I grew up on a farm that we jokingly described as binder twine alley, you know, like the ones where you're like, this fence needs repaired, but for right now, I'll just put it with some baling twine. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a big mind-bending kind of experience. I mean, my initial move overseas from Binder Twine Alley to working for the Sheikh of Dubai, where, you know, money was no object and, you know, everything was the best of the best. You know, so it sure gave me this insight into a different lifestyle, but it also allowed me to work in a very professional type of equine industry. Like I talked about before, how, you know, I was able to make something a career. And it really was like in Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, even in Kentucky, you know, you were in a respected career. Like that was, you know, when kids talk about, oh, I want to be a doctor or whatever. I always felt like in Canada, it wasn't that respected career. But working overseas, you really got to see in countries where they're very passionate about horses. And like it's a society is passionate about horses. You know, there was good benefits and housing and there was structure around a career like that. And it, so it was an amazing experience, but it really showed me the horses could be an actual living and not a hobby. And I think also like to see how horses are reared and treated in different countries was really amazing. I mean, in Australia, I was foaling outside and you'd be like mare, mare, kangaroo, kangaroo, mare, mare. It was amazing. And, you know, so you'd be foaling outside and like just in these beautiful little small foaling paddocks, but it was wild.
That's hilarious.
And then before that, I was in Kentucky working at Lane's End, which is a really high-end thoroughbred farm as well. And I mean, that was like, vets were there. There was a team of 5 foaling in the fanciest, most well-bedded down stall you could possibly have. You know, Australia was by myself. And, you know, if I needed help, I could call, but it was not going to be fast.
Wow.
So, or, you know, like prepping yearlings in Kentucky, where these were the most spoilt, babies you had ever seen. Like they were used to having their legs handled and checked and everything done since birth. And then you go to New Zealand and Australia and it's like, well, here's some yearlings. You have 2 months and they've barely been touched. Best of luck.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get to understand a wide variety of horse people. And, you know, not everyone here in Canada is like a dressage queen or, you know, the perfect hunter jumper princess. A lot of them are people who are growing up, they're breeding their horses, and those horses are outdoors. They are, you know, hardy, tough little guys who, you know, it's a different horse than, you know, the fancy thoroughbreds or the fancy warmbloods. And so to know how to go back and forth between those types of conversations and be comfortable and accepting in everyone. Everyone loves their horses, or no one's coming into this industry or raising horses or buying horses because they're like, stupid horses.
Because
A
it's a
passion of everything.
commitment, exactly.
It really is. So, you know, to take everyone for what they are and see the benefit in everyone and everyone's different way of treating or working with their horses, as long as they're coming from love for a horse.
Well, it was, I mean, ex you just said it, and I was going to ask, like, doing what you do now, looking back at what you have done and the different positions that you've been in and the different places, the different cultures, that's totally allowed you to branch your ability to communicate.
Yeah.
Right? So anybody coming to you, I would assume, and I mean, like I said, I've known a few insurance agents in my lifetime. They're very personable people. That they being able to carry on a conversation and ask the important questions that I'm guessing as an insurance agent, you need to ask, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And you have to be able to meet people where they are at. You know, you can't come out of the, you know, from some lofty place where no one's going to be able to make a connection with you. Because our industry, I jokingly say insurance brokers are all desperate people pleasers. We want to help. We want to make that connection. And so you have to be able to come to people at the level they're at and talk to them in a manner that they are comfortable with.
Totally.
You can't, you know, yeah. It's really important to be empathetic, be understanding, and just ask questions and let people talk. Because horse people love to talk about their horses and
Yeah.
what they're doing with their horses. And
So, okay, to kind of go back, and this is the question that I keep wanting to ask. So we talk about like the passionate horse people and all that kind of stuff, and these experiences that you had in the moment with these horses and these foals, etc. How hard was it for you to go from being in the barn hands-on to being in a suit in an office? Like, is there something that's kind of missing from your life? Do you feel like there's a bit of a detachment from the horse world in that sense? Or do you know what I mean? Because it's from one
yeah.
extreme to
Oh.
the other. And I don't know. Like, I massage horses. I've been doing it for forever
Yeah.
now. And I don't know if I could go from the barn to an office.
I think number one, I had to tone down my potty mouth because, you know, coming from working in Australia and Ireland where so yeah, that's the one thing I had to learn to not swear on everyday conversation because apparently that's not, you know, professional.
Yeah.
But I think the one thing for me is that I maintained a lot of connection to the horse world. So, you know, come the end of August, I am working the thoroughbred sale at Woodbine because I get volunteered into it every year by friends. I help a friend foal almost every year. In fact, the horse that I helped her foal 2 years ago, 3 years ago, sorry, just won the King's Plate trial. So it's going to the King's Plate later
That's
this month.
amazing.
So, I mean, I get those exciting. I know I'm so excited for her. She's amazing, and she's put so much of her life and her obsession into breeding these racehorses. And so, seeing the success is fantastic. But so I still get that connection. You know, I still go riding. I still do a lot of stuff that keeps me connected to the industry. So I think if I hadn't done that, I'd really struggle. I would feel that disconnect. But as it is, you know, I get to talk about horses every day, all day. I get to work with horses. I get to help foal in the winter sometimes. You know, so I get that. I get my, you know, my horse fix still. So I'm very lucky, I will say, very lucky,
That's
because I
awesome.
think I would get a bit twitchy.
Yeah. All right. So, next question, and we've already kind of touched on this. Insurance isn't the topic people always want to talk about. So, how do you connect it with it in a way that you have so that you can help make the conversation easier to have with clients?
Yeah. And I mean, I know I said it already, but insurance is always the last thing people want to talk about, but it's the first thing they turn to when things go wrong. So I think it's important for me to understand that and also be realistic about it. You know, no one's going to be as passionate as I am because I love the insurance industry. I really feel like I've fallen into the right one. And I know very few people who became brokers on purpose. Most people all of a sudden just find themselves in insurance. And you know, insurance appeals to like that detail-oriented, rule-loving part of me. You know, when you're tasked with, you know, checking the legs on foals for million-dollar mares coming into the paddock, you develop a certain level of obsessiveness on detail. So I think that's really helped me with this career. And like I said before, as a broker, I was a desperate people pleaser. I love helping people. And so, you know, if I can find ways of taking a stressor off someone's shoulders, you know, because we found the right coverage for them or they have that reassurance, then, you know, that's great. And I think insurance is always seen as this faceless group of uncaring people. Like it's just some voice at the end of the phone or someone that you email when it's, you know, they're there to make money and screw you over. And like Henry is filled with people who care and they want to help. Like sometimes we do have to be the bad guy and deliver bad news, which is hard for us, but the goal is always to help people when we can. So, you know, we see, you know, prices on everything increasing. And, you know, so our goal is to try and find ways of tailoring products to help clients. So they're not paying for insurance they don't need, but they've got the coverage there that's important for them. So it's, you know, talking through risk comfort, you know, how much risk are you willing to take? Sometimes people are willing to take lots of risks, or they have enough money that, you know, if they need vet bills paid, they'll just pay them. It's not a big deal. Other people are like, oh, I don't have a spare 20,000 lying around for when my horse colics and has to go to Guelph. So I need that coverage in there. So it's, you know, finding that balance for clients and you know, making sure that they're with the right insurance company, making sure they're with the right broker. So, you know, finding that match of personalities with a broker and a client. Sometimes people don't mesh. You know, you have to find that right balance. So I think that's something that we're really we jokingly say like we hold our clients' hands, and it's you know holding their hands through the explanations of coverage, holding their hands through you know making decisions or you know making changes that might impact how a policy responds. You know we don't want an insurance policy to feel like it's a foreign language. You know that's why we're always telling people like call us. We're gonna walk you through this. We're going to show you why this is important. We're going to show you why you should have this coverage, or we're going to tell you let's not do this coverage because it's not important for your, you know, specific lifestyle.
Okay.
So, you know, I think being empathetic and caring is something that really has always been a focus for us and for me.
Okay. So I do, there's a couple of things there. Does everyone need to insure their horse? Is one question. And then the second one is like, and I've heard quote unquote horror stories of people that have had to go through demands of what the insurance company expects or wants before they'll pay out a claim. And it can be a very traumatic experience for the horse owners and for whatever the horses have to go through before they're allowed any support from the insurance company. What are your thoughts on that? And how does Henry Equestrian, powered by NFP, make this experience different for horse people now?
Yeah. So the first question, no, not everyone needs to insure their horse. I mean, if you, when you purchase your horse, have enough money to replace the horse if it passes away, have enough money to pay your vet bills, and those aren't concerns you have. I don't see the need for insurance. I see the need for liability insurance. But you can get that through your provincial membership or, sometimes your home or farm insurance, you can extend coverage for that. But no, I'm sorry, if I bought a $5,000 horse and I can afford, $20,000 in vet bills, I'm not going to insure that horse. That's a risk that I can make financially or take financially. But, if you're buying a $50,000 horse, and that was all your money, and if you have a vet bill and it's, your horse is colicking and it needs surgery, and you don't have a spare 20,000, then insurance makes sense. So we always want to emphasize that it's about your risk tolerance. If you can tolerate lots of risk, which, financially is what we're talking about, if you can financially tolerate risk, then you're okay. But if you can't, or there's something that you need assistance with, that's where insurance comes in.
That sounds well supported. Okay, so to get back to a little bit of a life coaching angle here, one of the words I picked up on instantly in your bio was adaptability, which is a big life coaching concept. How has being adaptable been a central theme in your life, and how would you describe its importance in your life overall?
I genuinely think that in so many ways, this is horse people. You can never live your life in a little box when it comes to horses because they always challenge you. But I think probably my adaptability comes from getting bored easily. My brain is like a little hamster on a wheel. And so if I'm not challenged and I don't have new opportunities and adventures, I'm like, whoa. And then, my brain spins off into a million directions. I think that's a big push behind why I've had to become adaptable because, I'm ch changing countries, meeting new people, trying to, figure out how to live your life in a whole new location every year or two. You have to be adaptable, or I think you just retreat into your shell and hide. And it's funny though, it struck me that I'd never really thought about myself being an adaptable person before. But I really love the concept. I like that it's no longer just I get bored easily. I'm adaptable. It really has, like, I think being able to be adaptable has allowed me just to throw myself into so many things and just, I mean, this is a terrible phrase, but just giver, like, just do it. What's the worst that could happen? You fail? All right, whatever. Try
Well,
again.
and also
Yeah,
too, like adaptability, I think
No,
too,
go ahead.
is just when you want to think, okay, maybe I'll try this. But I guess adaptability slash resilience is another word, right? Like, so when things aren't quite going right, and I'm sure through all your travels and your different experiences and cultures and things, and in the business you're in now, your ability to adapt or pivot has become an important part of who you are.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when I look at being like my role as former role as a broker, you have to think on your feet. Everyone's trying to make money in new and amazing inventive ways as horse people because horses are really expensive and you need to make them pay sometimes. And so, you have clients who are coming and being like, I'm doing this. And you're like, ooh, How am I going to ensure that? Like, it's always this creative challenge for our brokers at Henry Equestrian to try and figure out how to think outside the box, be adaptable as our clients are being with their businesses, with our coverage. So,
okay. Awesome.
In everything we do.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So you talk about wanting to grow both professionally and personally. What have been some of your biggest growth lessons so far in life? And is there anything you feel comfortable sharing about where your learning curve is at right now?
Yeah. So I think, and this kind of ties into what I said with your last question, I think the biggest growth lesson for me has always just been, just go for it. There's something you want to achieve, you give it a try. You know, you might not always succeed, but you learn something from the attempt and then you try it again another way. Because if you stop trying to go for it and you start trying to achieve something new, you get nowhere. And then what's the point? So, you know, I think for me, really, stagnation is worse than failure. I wouldn't be able to deal with stagnation. And so I've really had to try and think of new ways to challenge myself and to grow. You know, like I love learning and I love trying to push myself into different opportunities or roles, you know. So right now my learning curve is transitioning from a very active orientation role, you know, as a broker. You know, everything is, you know, go, go, go. You have to do all this stuff. You have to respond. You have to get back to people. And then now, as I'm moving into the management side of the business, you know, it's more almost like conceptual, I think. And that's been a big change for me, is to change my style of thinking from this action-oriented. I mean, as a broker, I think it was very similar to working on farms. You had things you had to get accomplished that day. You didn't get that accomplished, they didn't get done, and you just had to keep working until they were done. Whereas now it's this sort of like, you know, my role now is directed at shining a light on Henry Equestrian, developing the business, making the job easier for my brokers, you know, making the job or life easier for our clients. And it's not just, I have a task I need to accomplish. It's a, how do I think of this task that I need to accomplish? And so it's a whole different skill set that has been challenging. And I think I felt really guilty for a while. And it was the same when I moved from farms into broking, where I come home at the end of the day and I'm exhausted. I feel like I didn't do anything. I sat at a desk all day and thought things. And it was this like guilty feeling of like, oh, how, I'm not allowed to feel tired. But the whole, you know, using your brain in different ways has been this huge growth for me. You know, and learning about communicating in different ways, you know, how everyone in my team needs to be communicated with in a different way. And you have to tailor your way of managing them to the person instead of having them tailor themselves to me. I need to tailor my thought process on how I work with staff to be individualized. And that's been like a big learning curve for me. And then, I mean, personally learning how to parent two teenagers.
Yeah. Have you done any continuing education or anything to help you through this process? Because a lot of the times, like an insurance broker, you're working for a company, but like you said, I mean, you're also kind of self-employed. And you're a leader in a leadership position. So have you done any kind of self growth or any kind of continuing education for yourself to help you be better in this position?
Yeah, I have. And I'm sort of continually looking for more. I mean, there's a bunch of different leadership and management podcasts I listen to, go on my little girl walk and, you know, listen to podcasts along with this one. I've been trying to read some books about leadership skills and management. Like there's this one book I'm reading right now about how to tell people hard things. Because again, like I said before, people pleaser here, not great at being like, you're not doing your job, or, you know, you need to improve this. And so figuring out how to say that and not like say it in circles. So it makes it even worse because you've sort of tried to beat around the bush for about 10 minutes and not just come out and said the hard thing. So I've been trying to really read about that because that's hard. I want people to like me. And telling them, feedback has been hard.
I've got a couple of good book suggestions for you. When we get off here, I'll suggest that you can learn a lot from them. So that's a good one.
Love that.
Okay. All right. So what kind of role has mentorship played in your life? And if given the opportunity, how would you approach being a mentor yourself?
Yeah. Mentorship has been huge. From the first barn I ever rode at, where they gave me the opportunities to do so many things and help guide me through becoming a real horse person and not just, that kid who comes for a lesson once a week, but really diving into becoming a horse person. I went to University of Guelph, and there were so many professors who were eager to take you under their wing, or I got opportunities to work in repro labs that I don't know how, but you just go and ask, hey, can I try something with you? And people are happy to help. I think sometimes I would get so insecure about, I can't go up and ask them for if I can ask them questions. I am not brave enough. But the moment you do, people are generous. Most people that I've asked have been happy to help. I think that's been a key in my life, because I always second guess myself and I'm like, oh, they're too important, or they're too, big in the industry. I can't ask them for, guidance or advice. And you end up building up your courage, the just go for it kind of thing. And I've never had someone be like, no, go away. I really enjoyed the opportunity to mentor, especially with people making a big switch in the career the way I did. I want to be able to make other people from the horse industry this is because it's a bit of a passion project for me, but other women make the transition into the business world. I really want other women to see all that they can do and be in this industry. And so, I see so many women in the horse world, especially sort of sometimes stuck at lower levels. And it just feels like they're never given this opportunity to flourish. And I want to see, everybody, I want to see everyone do well, but I really want to see women achieve things. And I really think sometimes it is just giving women opportunities.
Absolutely. I love everything that you said there. And the whole mentorship thing. I mean, I could think of all the individuals that have been in my life in those, where I had to pick those brave moments and walk up to someone and say, hey, can I ask you a question? Or can I shadow you for the day, or something like that? And it's just, they're so welcoming. And, I'm a very inquisitive person, so I'm sure I drove them nuts, but it's like, unless you ask, how do you know? And it always leads to, I would think, if it's meant to be with the right person that can give you the right information, there's no way it can go wrong, right? You kind of have to follow your gut and follow your intuition and your passion for wanting answers.
And I think so often, I don't mean to make generalizations, but I see men being brave enough to stand up and say, I want this. I deserve this. And I don't feel that a lot of the time women do. And myself included. And so if I can foster or mentor people or other women to take those steps and make those requests and say, I deserve this. I deserve to be able to have these opportunities. Then I would, I'd be very pleased if I finished my career and I knew I had allowed women that opportunity.
That's awesome. All right, Megan, last question. It's safe to say you grew up a horse girl and have stayed that way. So does that term have different meaning for you now with all of your experiences around the world and the profession you've chosen when you look back on that girl that spent her youth with horses and learning to ride?
I'm definitely the same horse girl I always have. Slightly more controlled potty mouth, but that's about it. I now think of being a horse girl as the way to stand out in my profession. You know, I get to be a specialist in an industry that recognizes and rewards specialists. So I think being a horse girl has been a strength. Horse girls get things done. They're brave, they're tough, and they're resilient. And that's, I think to me, that's a big part of success in life is all of those. And so I think a background in horses means that you can do pretty much anything.
I totally agree. I mean, it's not your average person that, you know, can handle maneuvering around or being with 1200 pounds worth of horse, right? Animal. Like some of the people that I know in my life who aren't horse people are just gobsmacked at what I do all day, every day with all these big, powerful horses. And you know what? There's a sense of strength there. And I just love the way you described horse girls. I just think that's amazing.
It's true though. I mean, my husband, big, tough, 6'2" strong dude, is constantly like, that's terrifying. Why are you doing that? And I'm just like, this is what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Just horses, whatever.
Awesome.
And I do think it's standing out in a crowd.
Well, I think you've stood out in this conversation. I have to say, this has been lovely. I am like, you know, doing this podcast, I've talked to so many people in so many areas of the horse world, and I'm continuing to expand out. And so, yes, this was a conversation that was very enlightening for me. And it's been lovely getting to know you. And I really appreciate your ability to adapt, your passion for learning, and for that sense of, you know, self-growth, and for sharing your passion for wanting to help horse people. So I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on Hitting Your Stride, and thank you for being a listener.
Best listen on as a for a girl walk. The way to go.
Well, thank you,
Megan. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on. This has been really great.
This has been lovely. Thank you. So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.